Isn't today great? Today is such a great day. Everything is so great.
We're going to have a lot of fun. We got some wonderful people for you.
All you mommies and daddies out there who complain to the radio station, I got something to say to you.
And the first thing you've got to do is say the call letters properly. Okay?
It's an incredible metamorphosis of love and emotion and sensitivity and tenderness and fun and joy and happiness.
Did you know that this show represents health and hope?
To make a list, check it twice, celebrate all that's naughty, all that's nice. Welcome aboard the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show, weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. How are ya? It is the season, folks making lists, favorite books, favorite movies, news stories. We'll do it in a casual way, as is our wont. And speaking of books, you might want to put author Andrew Cotto's latest book on your list of favorites for 2018. We'll chat with the author about his latest novel and the whole writing process. That's coming up. Take on the cultural cacophony in measured doses. Inspiration to action, challenge, success stories. Flooding the mailbag this time of year. I love it. And a smattering of your forgotten 45s, as time permits, with a holiday flair. All of that and you in the mix. Are you listening live? It is Tuesday, December 11th. Got an early start going. 12 noon out west, 2 p.m. central, 3 o'clock here in the east. We were late on Friday, we're early today, so we'll get it together. Number in motion, 347-857-4505. Hey, Twitter's 24-7, so live or on podcast. You can listen when it works and jump in on Twitter 24-7 at AB Writes. If you find yourself listening live to the broadcast, which more and more people each week are doing, and I love it, and yeah, I know it's counterintuitive if we keep screwing up the schedule, but we'll get it together. Avail yourself of the entire social media platforms, along with Twitter and the phone line. We've got the Facebook page and the PopNet chat box, so have at us the way it works for you. Show today is brought to you in part by Old Navy. It's time to fall in for great holiday styles and savings at Old Navy. By Panera, the way food should be, now delivered. And our friends at PopNet, arts, culture, and conversation on air, online, 24-7, featuring select editions of the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show and those robust roundtables. So get yourself a cup of joe, maybe an early nip of eggnog, and let's welcome Andrew Cotto into the festivities. Andrew is the author of three novels, the latest of which, Cucina Tipica, just released this last October. Actually, it's the official title, Cucina Tipica, An Italian Adventure. If you have wanderlust, if you love Italian food, I think you'll find this one a good read. It's quite delicious, but don't go into it hungry, that's for sure. Hey, Andrew, thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on the book.
Thanks, Amy Beth. Thanks for having me. I'm really happy to be here with you again.
Happy to have you back. I know the last time you were on a while ago, we were talking about your second book, which is Outer Borough Blues. And one thing that I like about you is you're kind of like me, a genre-jumping author. All your books are a little different. You haven't been pegged yet. You had your first book, I think, was Domino Effect, right?
Yeah, that was a coming-of-age story.
Then
I went to a noir.
Outer Borough Blues, really kind of gritty. And now this one, yeah. I don't know how you would characterize it. It's sort of a early life crisis, a young man who is sort of gets canned from his job, follows his fiance to Italy with a family secret in his pocket, and kind of things unravel there. We don't want to give away too much, but it's sort of an adventure for him to discover a different kind of lifestyle, as well as family secrets and his own romantic perils, etc., and a lot of food along the way, which is quite lovely. So talk to us a little bit about your, specifically about this book before we get into the whole process thing, but how did you get to this story, Jacoby Pines? To you?
Sure. The story there is actually set, it's not me.
People always ask that, right? Is it autobiographical?
Yeah,
I get that all the time too. Yeah.
I mean, I think once I finish enough books, so people will stop associating the character with me, hopefully. But it's not me. There's things about his experiences that are familiar to me, though. So the book takes place in the hills south of Florence, where I lived and wrote my first novel. 15 years ago, I lived there for a year. I was pivoting between careers as a fairly young man, I guess. And what I did it in sort of spectacular fashion, where I packed up and moved to Italy for a year and really, committed to writing my first novel, which ended up being The Domino Effect. But it was always in my head, this location. I'd blogged about my experiences there. I'd written a lot over the years for newspapers and magazines about my experiences in Italy and my knowledge of that country. And I'm an Italophile, obviously. And I love the food and the wine there. So I've written for a lot of magazines about it. I've traveled there on two occasions on assignment to write about Italy. So I have all this, working Italian knowledge in me. And my agent was saying to me at one point after Attleboro Blues came out, which has lots of food in it as well. I mean, the protagonist in that is not a detective, he's a chef, actually. The food writing is really working for your fiction as well as your non, obviously. So why don't you try and do something really over the top with the food? So I started, conceptualizing this narrative that takes place where I lived, with intimate knowledge of the surroundings, but has a real, propulsion of food driving the narrative.
Yeah,
that's sort of the genesis of it. Yeah.
So that sort of helped you shape it around the food a little bit, and then the story just. I mean, how does it work for you? I'm always interested. My own writing, people ask, and I always like to talk with other writers about their own process in terms of does the story just come to you? Do you let it evolve? I mean, you started with a place. It sounds like more than did you have the character in mind when you started with the place, or you had just the place in mind, and then the character kind of Jacoby came to you, and the story kind of revealed itself.
I had the place in mind, so the place was sort of tucked into my pocket, and I had this idea that I wanted there to be a driving gastronomic aspect to it without, overwhelming. And it's not like, it's not food fiction by any means. It just has that sort of added element to it. But I was thinking also, beyond those sort of fun aspects of food, which is sort of the difficulties of the times in which we live. There's lots of people, it's a challenging time, and I think lots of people are sort of being lost, in between the polarization of plenty of people are sort of in between who are having a hard time making sense of these times and, as particular as they are in certain respects. And I think this character just finds himself sort of disheartened, just feeling like, that America is no longer a place where he, feels so welcome. And so I want to try and take that fairly heavy concept of someone being disillusioned with the times in which he lives and sort of couch it in some fun stuff, where it's not, political by any means. It's not a polemic. It's just sort of, one of the challenges a quiet challenge people face these days is this sort of a sense of lack of identity, on a national level.
Yeah, that's true. And of course, particularly this character, Jacoby, is someone who doesn't have a lot of family. He's sort of at a loss in a way, right? I mean, at the beginning, you meet him at a time when he lost a job because of some recklessness on social media, I guess you might call it, right?
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. It's an inadvertent text message, so.
Yeah, an inadvertent text message. He is at a loss. He lost his father. I mean, he seems to be he's at a loss, and he does have a girlfriend or fiance that he goes with. She's a travel writer, and this is a good excuse for him to sort of get the heck out of Dodge, so to speak, because he didn't have a job, and he wanted to go anyway, and he has this, I don't want to give too much away, but he has something going on with his family that he finds out, some connection to Italy, he wants to look into it. So it's sort of an exploration. So, yeah, he is a perfect character for that kind of epitomizing the sense of rudderlessness that some people feel, I guess.
And there's an aspect of heritage to it, and we're realizing, if we watch TV, how popular these DNA tests and whatnot are, and whatever they're worth, there is something that people feel when they are, connecting somehow to heritage, to where they're from. We as Americans are all immigrants, right? So our families all come from other places, and that notion of tracking them down, I think seems really appealing now because we're just looking for other connections. Our families are getting smaller. We're being more itinerant. We're moving around. I just feel like, there's a inner desire to have a bigger connection, particularly today.
A different kind of life, right? Jacoby also wants a different kind of life, that he finds a slower pace,
absolutely,
something which seems a little bit more more traditional, older. It's a different world, actually, which is kind of fascinating, too. Yeah.
The back of the book says that he's looking for an antiquated existence, which I thought was kind of clever.
Yeah.
It's not for everyone, but it had to be for him. It's not like I'm trying to make any sort of political statement here. It's just, these things, this is the way this person's life is unfolding. And this is where he finds like his sense of place, with or without, if he ever connects with his family or not. It's in Italy where he feels, at home. And if you've ever been to Italy, you understand, why that is. Italy does things. If you're into, just like slow, their big food movement there is called the slow food movement, right? And that whole thing, that idea of just, enjoying life, not just your meals, but components of it, at a pace that's a little bit different.
The pace
here in the States, particularly in New York, is intense, and he's not, he can't handle the current, so he wants to get out.
Yeah, Pace, that's interesting. But it isn't. I wouldn't characterize it. Don't over or undersell it, I should say, as a political book, because this appeals to people beyond that. I mean, it may have an undertone for you, and you might be able to find it. But yeah, there's fun, and it's really a human connection, human drama. But it's different than the other books. So I guess my initial question was, do you just, when you just sit down, you just write whatever comes, and you just let it unfold. Yeah. You're not pegging yourself in a particular genre.
I wish I did. If I could do this all over again, I would have stuck with, you know, noir or young adult, or sort of establish myself in a genre for commercial reasons, but I don't think that's who I am. And my nonfiction jumps all over the place too. And I just like covering lots of things. I have lots of interests, you know,
I relate to that.
My stories come to me when they come to me. I mean, I just went back and wrote a sequel to Attleboro Blues because I was feeling that story. I mean, I felt like I hadn't, you know, really wanted to go back to that character, the protagonist there, Caesar Stiles, and take it and hopefully create a series out of it. So it's unpredictable.
It's hard to get pegged. Well, I know, because I have a mystery series, and now I'm like, I want to give it a rest and do other things, and I have a publisher that says, where's the next one? Where's the fourth one? I'm like, okay, I'll get to it, I hope, but, you know, I have something else that's tugging at me. So, yeah, unless you are so overly successful, sorry, obscurity sometimes has its privileges. If you're Stephen King, I guess, you're pegged. You have to write a certain way until he can veer a little bit now.
Yeah.
But for a long time he was running, you know, or J.K. Rowling or whoever, you know, you have to, John Grisham, they get mad at him when he veers from his, you know. But, yeah, I wish we all had those problems, right?
Yeah, I know.
I praise
poor
problems.
Poor them.
Or poor them.
I mean, they get to play in band, too, and then whatever.
That's true, yeah. Hard life. It's hard knock life for everybody. What about the process for you? I know the last time we talked, I think you were running around as an adjunct professor. I think now you got a regular study gig, which is great.
Yeah,
but
a full-time professor.
Is it great? Yeah. Is it good? No, I mean,
it's not
it's good for
today,
you, for, you know, stability, but is it good for your writing, I guess? Yeah, go ahead.
Today in particular is not so great. Like before coming on the air with you, which is the highlight of my day, I was, you know, grading papers as I will be all week long because this is the last week of the semester. By Friday, so this week is complete hell for me. But you know, that being said, after next week it's lovely until the middle of January when I'm off, and just during the regular course of the calendar, you know, school academic year, I can manage. You know, I teach full time. I have a pretty big course load and other responsibilities, but you know, if I'm going to, you know, continue to be a writer, I have to find a way to write all the time. It's not like be seasonal with it, you know, or on the weekends. You know, I write every day. More and something involved in my writing every single day, because otherwise I don't believe I'm a writer anymore. You know, I don't want to sit there, you know, and start making plans for, like, you know, when I get my next breaks coming and I'll pile it in or whatever. I can't do that from a scheduling standpoint, also from a productivity standpoint. You know, if I'm not engaged creatively with a narrative or a story in progress of some sort, you know, I'm just going to lose it. So I have to do it, and I'm glad to do it. I mean, I want to keep compiling information. I just keep putting, you know, wood on the stack, and until I have enough. It's a novel or it's a story, and if I deviate from that, I'm kind of screwed.
What's the schedule look like for you? So you do have a thing every morning? I do it every night. I mean, you
do
it early morning.
Yeah, I write in the morning. I'm a morning person. I'm a morning writer. I'm not a morning person. No one wants to talk to me then. But I get out of bed and I'm fresh. My ideas are there. You know, I'm not distracted. Mm-hmm. You know, too much. You know, I have a small little routine with the computer where I check a couple of websites to make sure the world hasn't fallen apart, and then I just go. And you know, by having that consistency, the going part is simple. I mean, I know what I'm going to write before I sit down. You know, it's a work in progress, so it changes along the way. But you know,
right.
all that continuity, that momentum is there. You know, and I'm coming off the clean from having slept for hopefully 8 hours or whatever. You know, I hope I slept well. But I'm dreaming about it. I'm immersed in it. You know, and then it just comes out.
And it comes out fresh. And how long do you commit to it? An hour, 2 hours, 4 hours? What's your?
I'm a word guy per day. You know, I'm a 500 minimum per day. On a good day, I'll hit 1,000, and then my eyes will start to hurt. You know, I'll know exactly, but you know, somewhere between 500 and 1,000, depending on how it's coming. But 500 for sure. And I think, you know, that seems pretty easy. But, you know, 500 a day adds up. If you're 500 a day, 5 days a week, that's 2,500 words a week, you know 10,000 words a month. You know, then that all, if it's every month, then you're getting stuff done.
You're getting stuff done, yeah. So, but that's, you know, I always like to impress upon people who listen who are writers or aspiring writers are always curious, you know, what to do, because people always think, oh, you have a lot of ideas, it's easy, things just come to you, and it's like, no, it's not. I mean, they do come to you, but you have to flesh it out, you have to work it, you have to really sit down, and you have to sit down some days, frankly, where it's not always coming that great. Like, some days you might have 500 words, but they might not be the greatest, right? I mean, that sometimes happens.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I do when I begin is I go back to what I wrote the day before and look it over, and sometimes that involves some changes. Or some editing or revision or just cutting stuff out. But, you know, getting it, you have to get it down. Otherwise, it's just smoke.
Exactly. You got to get it down, yeah. I like to leave a little bit, like, I know where I'm at so that I have an idea of where I'm going to start the next day, that kind of thing,
yeah. Yeah, that's great, too. I mean, I think Hemingway says that. He would leave, like, you know, he wouldn't go to that last stroke until he knew he could pick up with it the next day. Whatever works for you. But, like, I think the key is just, immersed.
Stay into it, stay engaged, regardless of the crazy schedule.
Yeah.
No excuses.
Yeah.
You're a no excuses person. That's good.
There's no excuses. I had this conversation a lot. You know, I work in an MFA program, too, and one of the things I say to students all the time is that, you know, you can talk about this all you want. Okay? You can make plans and live like a writer. Your ass isn't in the chair every day. You're not a writer.
Yeah. Well, that was Jackie Parker, right?
Single day.
The key is to have the ass in the chair, right? That was her line.
Oh, is that what Dorothy Parker said?
Dorothy Parker, I think, yeah. That's the key to writing, being ass in the chair. Talk a little bit about your influences. I mean, who are you reading? Who have you read that has stuck with you as your biggest influences?
I mean, I obviously, it makes sense that I've read rather eclectically because my style seems to reflect that. I didn't grow up, and I tell the story of once in a while, and I like telling you because I think it's a different twist. I didn't grow up with my nose in a book. You know, I wasn't a voracious reader. I was a crappy student. You know, I was into, playing sports and music and being out of the house and, going crazy and getting in trouble and et cetera. I really loved music, was my first love of the arts. My dad's a musician. Well, many of my cousins are successful musicians or in theater. And I just love that art form of music, particularly, people who wrote songs that sounded like stories. So I'd sit in my room, when I wasn't outside, banging my head against the wall, reading, with my headphones on and listening to music and reading the lyrics on the liner notes used to come in the old albums,
I
think through the songs, Springsteen albums, people who wrote good songs, I still love reading. And as I was in college, I guess I realized that I had a knack for storytelling and interest in the narrative art form, and became a list maker. And then I started reading a lot, and I was everywhere. I was trying to make up for all those lost years. So I was reading everything from Kurt Vonnegut to Hemingway to Flannery O'Connor. I was just bouncing around kind of where my courses were taking me, and then into adulthood, et cetera. I started reading, the things I loved, the genre I really liked at that point when I first got into, reading as a form of educating myself was, To Kill a Mockingbird and Catcher in the Rye. I fell in love with sort of the coming of age stories, which makes sense for my first novel being one of those. And then I got really into noir. I got into mystery. I liked the narrative aspects of, Devil in a Blue Dress or a Mystic River by Dennis Lehane, George Pelicano stuff. I got into that. Those mystery, I'm forgetting the guy's name. James Crumley, The Last Good Kiss. I really got into those. It's sort of, I'm all over the place. I like kind of French stuff a lot. I like a lot of nonfiction. I like the long form nonfiction stuff too. As a teacher, I also find myself reading a lot of what I'm having to teach. A lot of my reading is predetermined by the courses I'm teaching, if they're literature courses. I just taught a great literature course about New York writers. I just taught a great lit class. I just wrapped it up on New York writers, and I slipped one of my books in there too, because I guess I could say I was a New York writer.
there you go. You're right. Yeah. Well, I think the last time we were talking about how you could do one for each borough, right?
Oh yeah. I still got to do Manhattan. And the Bronx and Staten Island. So I will.
Yeah. I'll take Manhattan. That would be fun. Yeah. Then you could have your whole collection. I could just see the promotions here. We got promotions for you. The whole collection could go on Amazon as a whole set. All the here you go.
And five different boroughs.
That's right. Well, it ties it together because it's New York. Andrew Cotto, the New York collection.
Yeah, I'll do a horror story in Staten Island. I'm having to move there or something.
We talked about Staten Island last time you were on. But they did have a movie called Staten Island, I think, that was kind of interesting. Yeah, I think so. With Andy Garcia,
yeah.
I think, was in it.
What about
your teaching? And that can be a daunting, heavy load with a lot of student papers and student stories. How is that going? I mean, you mentioned you're in the MFA program. So how are the student writing, I guess, the quality of student writing, and how does that, does that energize you or depress you in some ways?
Well, I'm a little depressed right now because I have so many of them. You know, it's not daunting.
Right.
The paper grading can be daunting. You know, most of what I'm teaching is undergrad, where I've got papers to grade. The graduate students just have works in progress, and that's really fun, and I love that kind of stuff. I love workshopping creative writing in progress. My other stuff at LIM College in Manhattan, where I'm a full-time instructor of English, is like, you know, freshman English or, you know, very essay-laden stuff, and it's everything about it I love. I love students. I love talking about writing. I love going there every day. When the papers start piling up, I get a little bit blue. That's part of the job. I just have to keep, you know, reminding myself that, you know, that's part of teaching. They need the feedback. And once I get through it, come on, I have my summers off. I have a 6-week break coming up. I get spring break. You know, I'm a grown man who gets spring break and summers off. And I cannot complain about grading papers. I'm telling myself that.
You
got to
pace yourself with that too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, just throwing your stick into it now. I appreciate it. It's a stable gig, and that's good. And you're plugged into what students are thinking about and doing, and it helps too, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And characters.
Yeah, because I know what kids are into, which is so helpful to me. No, sorry.
Yeah.
But like knowing, I think it's fun too, though. But like hanging out with people all day who are not of your generation is fun. You know, especially if they're younger. But it's a different look at the world, and it's nice.
Yeah.
I get to talk about politics and et cetera too, and you know, I feel like I'm sort of, you know, someone who helps demystify the world for them in ways, you know, beyond just how to write good sentences.
Right. Yeah. Of course. That's why stories are always important. The technical stuff is the technical stuff, and you still have to do it, but there's more to it.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think when you're in teaching college kids, you're teaching them how to think, not really teaching them how to write necessarily, but how to think about things and get ideas. And that's fun to learn.
Yeah. And see if they get it and they get better and they evolve. That's always exciting. Indeed. Anything on your list this year as your favorite book that you read this year, which doesn't have to be a book that came out this year, because that's my rule is I'm sort of like, you know, I'm pretty liberal about that, casual with the rules on that, but what's the favorite thing you read recently?
That's a good question. I won't be so corny and say my own book. I won't, I promise.
Yeah, right. Besides your own book, yeah.
Besides my own book. We read, but I hadn't read in a long time, was On Black Sister Street, that novel by Chigo Nwigwe. She's from Nigeria and Brussels via Nigeria, I guess. It's a great novel. One of the courses that we teach is an international literature course, and everybody's reading Americana, of course. I was just sick of Americana. I read it and think it's fantastic, but I just couldn't teach it again. I was going to choke myself with the book. So I picked another similar book of similar sort of orientation. It's an African author. It's really compelling in that it's about these four women from four distinct backgrounds who all end up trade in Antwerp. And it's just beautifully written and just very compelling. And I thought it was probably one of the ones where I'm saying this is the best book I've read in a long time. And it really was. It's called On Black Sister Street. And it's great.
I'll have to put that on a list. I haven't read it yet, so I will see.
We also
fascinating
read Disgrace
stuff.
By Jim Godfrey. That was killer. I've read that before, but we read that too. Disgrace, and it was just staggering.
That's not new, though, is it?
No. I think it won the Pulitzer Prize in like 2000.
Yeah.
Well, post-apartheid, so on. He can write.
So what are you doing now? What are you working on now? You have said you did a sequel to Outer Borough Blues. Is that done?
I just finished that. I finished the sequel to Outer Borough Blues. Thank you. And it's really good. It's called Black Irish Blues. I'm stuck with the blues in my title, which is fine with me. I like that most.
I thought it was
anyway.
Outer Borough Blues 2. You know, it's like the movies.
Outer Borough. Ray Atterborough. I would have loved to kept that somehow, but he leaves Brooklyn at the end of that novel, so I had to pick it up where he was going, which is going to the place he grew up in, New Jersey, and he's going to get this whole redemption plan in order, and it's really good. The characters are great, and I like writing that first person style's the best of anything I've written. I mean, I love that voice. He's poetic, but he's tough. And I really want to try and go with it further. I know where the next one's going to. He's going to go down back to Louisiana if I can get a third. So I'm excited about that. I just finished it.
It's like a series.
Translated. Yeah, I definitely want to make a series. And I think this guy is so compelling. And I've been talking to some people about an independent film on Attleboro Blues. I got to try and write that treatment for that. That's sort of next on my list during the break. I'm doing lots of work, lots of writing now to help promote Kuchina Deepika. Your listeners probably do or have a sense that, writing books is hard, selling them is much harder. I have some obligations.
I
committed myself to helping out any way I can with promotion. I'll do anything. I'll wash the person's car. And the people are asking me to write things, about the novel. So I'm doing a Large Hearted Boy playlist, that blog, Large Hearted Boy. It's a great blog there where the authors make soundtracks for their novels and explain, even if the songs don't appear in the book, they sort of create a soundtrack.
It's
called Large Hearted Boy.
Familiar.
Oh, it's a great guy from Brooklyn named David Kutowski. It's called Large Hearted Boy. It's a blog.
It
has a playlist associated with it. It's great. I'm doing one of those for the novel. I am writing some stories about the genesis of it and whether it came about, my experiences in Italy, etc. But quite a bit to do, writing to do associated with Kuchina Deepika, because I really think it has commercial potential. I think this is the book that, can appeal to a large swath of the audience. I think it's gender appealing, both men and women, but obviously more for women because they read more fiction, but also generations. I could see, my mother and her friends loving this as much as I can see my friends loving it, as I can see my students loving it. So I think it really, it's kind of, it has a broad appeal. So I'm really working hard on getting as much attention as I can, because it's just hard. And, I'm hoping to do as many things such as this and really spend time seeking out reviewers and opportunities to promote and, doing more than I have in the past, because I just feel like this is the one that could have some, some breakthrough success. And all that being said,
we're always looking for that
novel.
I get you. I know it's hard.
Yeah.
It's like once you're done, you think you're done, but then you're not really done because of the promotion. I know it's hard, but all the best with it. It's called Kuchina Deepika, an Italian adventure novel by Andrew Cotto, and of course you can get it at the usual places. You do have a website. It's andrewcotto.com. As always, we'll post a link along with our podcast when it becomes available. And it's always a pleasure talking with you, Andrew. Thank you. Congrats on the book and all the other efforts. And please keep us posted and have a great holiday season. Okay.
Thanks, Amy Beth. My pleasure.
Happy. We'll talk again, I'm sure. Take care.
I look forward to it. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. There's Andrew Cotto. Details, andrewcotto.com. As I said, we'll post it for you when we get the podcast running. But again, it is the Amy Beth Berkowitz Show. Happy to have you aboard.
Well, I can remember like it was only yesterday. Love was young and full. Like a little child at play. But oh, how lovers change. I never dreamed out easily. For now, I'm just a shadow of the boy I used to be. Oh, moment gone. Oh yeah, yeah. And when I write the book.
me say 1,000 words a day. There you go. Rock pile. When I write the book on the Amy Beth Argui Show, a tip of the hat to Andrew Cotto, whose latest novel is Cucina Tipica, an Italian adventure. It's out now. Details at andrewcotto.com. Posted for you, as we said, a link to his website, as well as the podcast when it becomes available. So what are you reading? What are you looking forward to reading? Reach out via Twitter, AV Writes. Phone line 347-857-4505 if you find yourself listening live on Tuesday, December 11th. Also the PopNet chat box and the Facebook page open. Darla on the PopNet chat box says, intriguing conversation, catching the show live. Unfortunately, not the greatest telephone connection. Yeah, we had a little issue there. I hope it came through okay, but yeah, maybe it got smoothed out during processing. We'll see. We do what we can. But thank you, Darla. Oh, and she adds, I'm reading Michelle Obama's Becoming, just started it. Hey, that's the top of my list. I haven't read it yet. It's on the top of my wish list, as so many people. It's the best-selling book of the year, I think, but definitely want to read that. Among my favorites, I will say my favorite fiction book that I read this year came out officially in 2017, but I read it this past year. It's Elizabeth Strout's Anything is Possible, a collection of stories that I think rival her masterpiece, Olive Kittredge. Beautiful book, which I almost didn't read because I didn't realize, and I wouldn't have read it probably, which teaches you something. And I realized it was sort of a sequel or a follow-up to the Lucy Barton story novel, which I didn't like that much. It was sort of her thinnest volume of the ones that I've read of hers. But this collection was just so outstanding, so real, so beautiful. I can't recommend it enough, and I love Olive Kittredge, so those two side by side, I think, are her masterpieces, and I read several of her books, but really beautiful stuff. Indeed. Nonfiction, Russian Roulette, the behind the scenes of the whole 2016, how Russia kind of worked its way into the campaign, as you know about it, by David Korn and Michael Isikoff. I'm just saying that it's very intriguing, all the backstories and machinations, political intrigue. They're going to have to do like a sequel, though, or an updated, revised version as all these new things are coming out. And I also loved The Marble Faun of Grey Gardens, Jerry Torrey, the handyman depicted in that classic cult documentary, Grey Gardens, wrote this beautiful, heartfelt book. We had him on the show as a guest a few months back. And what a genuine guy. And the book is so life-affirming and all the things he went through from his hard childhood to coming out and dealing with the AIDS crisis. I mean, there's just so much in there beyond the Grey Gardens experience. And, of course, that is at the center of it. But it's just a beautiful book. And he's such a warm-hearted, authentic guy. And just amazing, the people he came across. And now he's a sculptor. And in between, he did all kinds of things. He worked as a mover, a taxi cab driver, all kinds of stuff. Just fascinating, interesting book, interesting person. I love those real-life stories that are just fascinating. And it's kind of a life-affirming, even people go through struggles, how they come out the other end. Fascinating and really intriguing. Lots of great books out there. I'm curious what you're reading and what you'd like to recommend. Twitter feed is AB Writes, phone line 347-857-4505. Also, holiday classics, movies, etc. The movie list for the holidays for me. I love The Man Who Came to Dinner with Bette Davis and Monty Woolley. It's just so funny. I love to see it every year. I used to love Christmas in Connecticut. Sometimes I get tired of that one with Barbara Stanwyck. Scrooge, I love the musical version with Albert Finney, primarily because I have these heartwarming memories as a little child going to Radio City to see that film with my grandfather, who sort of knew everybody in the city and got us in through the back door, which was always so much fun. So I know Trudy loves the idea of going to Radio City to see the Rockettes. That's one of her goals. And on TV, you know, Rudy got a bad rap, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. I'm not sure about Peanuts. I love the Peanuts classic. And don't mess with my Frosty, especially when Ella is singing the song. Here's Ella Fitzgerald on the 85th Rudy Arcadia Show. There
That's Frosty the Snowman. He's a jolly, happy soul. With a corncob pipe and a button nose and two eyes made out of coal. Frosty the Snowman is a fairy tale, they say. He was made of snow, but the children know how he came to life one day. There must have been some magic in that old silk hat they found, for when they placed it on his head, he began to dance around. Oh, Frosty the Snowman was alive as he could be, and the children say he could laugh and play just the same as you and me. Let's run and we'll have some fun now before I melt away.
So down to the village with the Bruce.
you can. He lets him down the streets of town, right to the traffic cop. And he only paused a moment when he heard him holler, "Stop!" For Frosty the Snowman had to hurry on his way. But he waved goodbye, saying, "Don't you cry, I'll be back again someday." Thumpity thump thump, thumpity thump thump, look at Frosty go. Thumpity thump thump, thumpity thump thump, over the hills of snow.
Oh my God, it's snowing! It's snowing!
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Man, it doesn't show signs of stopping, and I've brought me some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low. Let it snow, let it snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you really hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. And the fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbying. But as long as you'd love me so, let it snow and snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you really grab me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. Oh, the fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbying. But as long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
I'm the Grinch that stole Christmas. And I'm sorry.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry the Yuletide gay. From now on, our troubles will be miles away. Here we are as in olden days.
Christmas, great version from the Pretenders for Sally on the Amy Beth Arguey Show. Dean Martin doing Let It Snow, Let It Snow, Let It Snow for Brandy and Ella Fitzgerald, taking that snowy turn on Frosty the Snowman. It is the Amy Beth Arguey Show. Happy holidays indeed. We're talking your favorites when it comes to books, movies, music, etc. for the year, and it doesn't have to be this year because we're pretty casual. Twitter feed, AB Wright, phone line 347-857-4505 for those listening live on Tuesday, December 11th, PopNet chat box, Facebook page open as well. So down Twitter we go, a few folks chime in. Melissa says, I read The Everlasting Sunday by Robert Lufkins. It took me a few attempts to get going with this, but then I couldn't stop. Strange and wonderful and ambiguous, with so many secrets and so much not said, it's going to haunt me. 2018. All right, Melissa, we'll have to check that one out. And here's another good one from Sivi, who says, another almost love story that will tug at your heart is Tin Man by Sarah Winman. The synopsis she gives, three friends who love each other, but the degrees differ. What happens when one of them is left behind with memories? There is too much heartbreaking beauty in this book, Books 2018. All right, a couple to think about. You make your reading list, maybe if you have some time off on the holiday week, or if you're like our guest teaching college, she has 6 weeks off. That's always a good deal, right? Nobody, if you're, unless you're in school or you're a teacher, you don't have those long vacations anymore. But if you have a little time off, what book do you want to take and curl up with, as they say? And Time Magazine came out with its Person of the Year. It was awarded to the quote-unquote guardians, the journalists who have been killed or imprisoned over the year. And, boy, unfortunately, it was an apt choice, but too many of them, of course, Khashoggi and others. Donald Trump was the runner-up, and I think he was excited about it because it's sort of a victory of sorts. He can now be known as individual number two instead of individual number one. Bigly cleared of all charges. No collusion. No smocking gun. Unraveling, though, he is now. Confab he had earlier today with Chuck and Nancy in the Oval Office talking about the perhaps the shutdown of the government if he doesn't get his border funding, well, his funding for the border wall. And guess what? He's owning it. He says, well, I'll happily shut down the government because of this. I mean, it's just, it's crazy. But Democrats, you better get your act together for 2020. With all this stuff coming out, he's unraveling, the chief of staff leaving. They can't find anybody. Who the heck is going to do it? That guy Nick Ayers took a powder, who is now Mike Pence's chief of staff, who Donald Trump wanted supposedly because he reminds him, he looks sort of like what Donald Trump used to look like when he was younger. I mean, really, this is how he picks people out of central casting. But I think they're wedding in Gary Busey, John Rich, and if all else fails, Teresa from The Real Housewives of New Jersey. I think her parole is up, isn't it? Intriguing indeed. Twitter feed Amy Wright, phone line 347-857-4505. What's on your holiday wish list? Let's talk Inspiration to Action Challenge while we have a chance. Robin in, where is Robin? Outside of Memphis, I think she said. Started the challenge on and off for a while. It has gotten me into a better groove creatively. I am working every day on the journaling and approaching my writing and my painting with a new appreciation and a new step in my, new joy in my step. There you go. Well, that's what it's all about, Robin. Get yourself reacquainted with your inner artist. Inspiration to Action Challenge, has it worked for you? Please reach out. Let us know, because I'd love to give you a shout-out. You deserve it. I know you're working hard. Also, though, you're helping other folks, and that's the important part here, encouraging each other to get the mojo going, to get jump-started again, creatively speaking. If you need a little help in that right direction, I'll give you a creative kick in your keister. We'll start a creativity coaching counseling conversation. First one is on me, 20 minutes or so. I'll give you a primer on the challenge, some other tips and tricks to get you in the right creative and more productive and joyous direction. Either way, reach out to the website. It's amybethakawy, A-R-K-A-W-Y.com. Easy access via the Twitter feed. While you're there, peruse my stories, the Eliza Gordon mysteries, some other goodies up for grabs. And they make great stocking stuffers, ebooks, paperbacks, too. And you can also chime in with your guest suggestions, big story, and forgotten 45 requests, kind of one-stop shopping at the website, amybethakawy.com. Links to the podcast available as well. So what's on your wish list? Some people have bigger wish lists than others. Talk about ambitious. And a baby.
Boom, 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 boom,
Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa baby. So hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa baby, a 54 convertible to light blue. I'll wait up for you, dear Santa baby. So hurry down the chimney tonight. Think of all the fun I've missed. Think of all the fellas that I haven't kissed. Next year I could be just as good if you check off my Christmas list. Santa baby, I want a yacht, and really that's not a lot. Been an angel all year, Santa baby. So hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa honey, one little thing I really need, the deed to a platinum mine, Santa baby. So hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa cutie, and fill my stocking with a duplex and checks. Sign your X on the line, Santa cutie, and hurry down the chimney tonight. Come and trim my Christmas tree with some decorations bought at Tiffany. I really do believe in you. Let's see if you believe in me. Santa baby, forgot to mention one little thing, a ring. I don't mean on the phone, Santa baby. So hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry. Tonight.
Who goes there?
Santa Claus.
Oh, there ain't no Santa Claus.
Oh, yes, there is, and we got a present for you.
You have?
Right.
Where?
Shopping, holiday shopping, whatever you want to call it. A great one from The Roaches, Silver Bells, for Dondi and Pete on the Amy Beth Arkowi Show, and Eartha Kitt, Vintage Santa Baby. Ronaldo said it had to be the Eartha Kitt version. Trudy found it for you. Thanks so much for chiming along and having some fun with us here in the holiday spirit on the Amy Beth Arkowi Show. And speaking of holiday spirit and inspiration, I want to say a few words about a friend I lost this week, a gentleman named Steve Manzino. He was a man who lived for the theater but didn't make his living from the theater. His livelihood was made in other ways, as a contractor and a creator of Artisan Peanut Butters. But he loved working on the stage, and he was a stalwart in the New York suburban communities, Connecticut, and community and regional theaters. I had the opportunity to work with him on one of my plays some years back, both in the Schoolhouse Playwrights Workshop here in Westchester County, and then we took it down to Off-Broadway. Man of great talent, humor, kindness, and apparently was a mentor to a lot of younger people, too. All the tributes coming out since we lost him just this past week, only in his mid-50s. I think I spoke with him a few months ago. I didn't realize he was sick, had been for a while, struggled, but was lovely to work with and was very generous with his time for people, newcomers to the stage. He mentored young people on various productions. He was in Life with Father, and all these kids came out with these tributes talking about how he kind of took them under his wing and made them feel more comfortable and taught them a lot, and the kindness that he showed and just the verve he had and the love he had for his art and his craft. It's not about whether you're making a living at it, whether you're becoming famous. It's about loving it and living it, and I think a talent for living is what this gentleman exhibited and exuded, and that's what we all have to learn from that, is to seize the day. Don't neglect your creative juices. Don't neglect all that talent. Go for it. Run to it. Take a step or two towards your dreams. There's no small step. Do it every day, and embrace it. And he did embrace it indeed. And Steve, I'm so sorry you're gone, but you left your mark, my friend, and I hope you had an easy transition and a standing ovation. So do what you can while you're here, because we just don't know. None of us know, indeed. Thanks again going out to Andrew Cotto. He's making the most of it, writing every single day. His new book is out, Cucina Tipica, An Italian Adventure. We will post the link to his website, andrewcotto.com. You can find out details there. Also available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the usual places, I'm sure. Or ask for it. You can always order books in bookstores. I always tell people when they say, well, your book wasn't in the bookstore. Ask for it. They'll order it. They'll get it for you. No problem. We'll post it for you, the link to the podcast, of course. Follow the Andrew Tharkley Show, where you get your podcast from Spotify to Mixcloud, Stitcher to BTR site, iTunes and NetNow, and the select editions, too, on the Arts Radio Network and PopNet. All roads lead back to our website, Amy Beth Arkawy, ARKAWY.com. There you go. I can spell my own last name. Sure I can. And the links to the podcast are there, too. So friend me on Facebook, follow our producer Trudy Hart on Twitter at Radio Trudy, and follow me for the 24/7 conversation at AB Writes. Thanks to the gang, Trudy and Aurora in the booth, and all the headquarters for getting us going as usual. And in the meantime, I hope you drive safe, play nice, dream big. Come back and see us, won't you? On the Amy Beth Arkawy Show, we'll leave you with a little rocking around the Christmas tree music from Darlene Love, Ronnie Spector. Take care. Love you all.